The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
Then it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, January 9th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for being here. We've got all sorts of interesting news to get to today. But first, we've got to welcome back to the show Brian the Red, who's hanging out over here on camera too. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing fine, Russ. How's it going?
Going very well. We're freezing and getting rained on here in Portland, Oregon. I know
we're used to that. You know, I skate around town all over the place, and I'm used to the weather right now. You need to learn to layer when you're 2 years old if you live in Portland.
That's right. And speaking of Brian the Red, we've got Red Eyes Reggae Flashback coming up tonight at 8 p.m., the best in roots reggae. Tell them a little bit what they'll hear tonight.
You know, and I've had 3 weeks to plan this show, and I still haven't gotten the playlist just right. But we've got a great Daily Toker tune for you coming up a little bit later at the 420 break. So that'll give you a little preview on the niceness that's coming up tonight.
All right, check that out. Also coming up on today's show, the White House has finally released their response to various petitions calling for the legalization of marijuana, or at least the federal government to allow the states that have legalized to proceed without federal interference. We'll give you their reaction, and we'll go behind the headlines to do a little analysis and tear apart some of the parsing of the words there. Really, it's not that different a response than we got 4 years ago. Also, we'll break down the latest 420 radio headlines right after this first break. And at half past the hour, we welcome back in 2013, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's going to be joining us here. Yes, we all love Dr. Mitch. He'll be taking your live questions. If you got a question on cannabis science, culture, history, or health, this is the guy that can help you out, Dr. Mitch Earlywine. So get into our chat room at Ustream, type /login. You can create an account. Or you can call us live at 971-533-7111. Then, toward the end of the show, we'll have time for a little radical rant. I'm going to go over this piece that was in the New York Times that basically said that, well, marijuana's pretty much legal in California anyway, so why do we need to worry so much? Seems they forgot a very significant part of the marijuana debate in this piece. Another blogger at Huffington Post picked it up, and I'm going to give you that, plus some of the statistics to back up his points. All of that coming up on the Russ Belville Show today. Check us out, RussBellvilleShow.com, and we are live right here at 420radio.org.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Grab-a-dab-a-goo!
Man, is that the Reaper Man?
That's the Reaper Man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
This is a Russ Belville Show news alert. Whatever you do, don't smoke pot. You don't want to turn out to be a loser, like Olympian Michael Phelps, actor Jack Nicholson, singer Miley Cyrus, rocket scientist Dr. Carl Sagan, pop star Rihanna, actress Cameron Diaz, country legend Willie Nelson, President Barack Obama, Cy Young pitcher Tim Lincecum.
Oh, have you ever met that funny Reaper Man? Have you ever met that funny Reaper Man? If he says he swam to China, tell you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that Reaper Man.
And over 100 million other Americans.
Have you ever met funny Reaper Man? If he says he walks the ocean, anytime he takes a notion, then you know you're talking to Reaper Man.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News. I'm Russ Belville with the news. Patrick Kennedy on marijuana. It destroys the brain and expedites psychosis. This from the Washington Post. Patrick Kennedy, the former Rhode Island congressman and scion of the famed Democratic Kennedy dynasty, said, quote, marijuana destroys the brain and expedites psychosis. It's just overall a very dangerous drug, end quote. Kennedy's public battles with alcohol and prescription drugs are well known. Was pot an issue for him? He's used it, but wouldn't elaborate. Still, it's all part of the same conversation for him. Quote, in terms of neurobiology, there's no distinction between the quality and types of drugs that people get addicted to. That's why they call it a gateway drug. Addiction is addiction is addiction. End quote. Kennedy, age 45, left Washington 2 years ago and began traveling the country to see how legislation he spearheaded on mental health is being implemented. He's become convinced that marijuana, quote, the single biggest threat to the cause I care so much about, end quote, is as destructive as alcohol and tobacco, and just launched Project SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, to shift the debate from legalization to prevention and treatment. Kennedy's partners in the cause include Dr. Kevin Sabet, a former drug policy advisor in the Obama administration, and conservative commentator David Frum has joined Project SAM's board as well. He said he fears legalization would create another big tobacco. Project SAM kicks off Thursday in Denver. Not a coincidence there. And Kennedy will come to the District of Columbia on January 18th to help promote his cousin, Christopher Kennedy Lawford's new book, Recover to Live, Kick Any Habit, Manage Any Addiction. Legal pot business to bloom in Washington. This from Time Magazine, Time.com. Voters in Colorado and Washington recently approved the legalization of marijuana for recreational, not medical purposes, but this hardly means that the business of growing and dispensing of pot will all be fun and games. For a license to grow or sell pot in Colorado, would-be entrepreneurs have to go through background checks, submit years of bank statements, and cough up deposits and licensing and application fees that often add up to a hefty $500,000. Regulation is also required for 24/7 video surveillance, accessible to the police over the internet, and marijuana dispensaries and farms where pot is grown. Each and every one of the thousands of pot plants grown in the state must also be labeled with a barcode so that they can be tracked. In some ways, the legal marijuana industry is a mirror image of the greater farming and food industry, in which large businesses have a huge advantage over mom-and-pop operations. Denver Relief is considered a medium-sized grower, and it is based in a 13,000-square-foot warehouse, where 2,000 pot plants require 62,000 watts of power and 2,000 2,000 gallons of filtered water each day. Legal marijuana is already big business in Colorado. In the past 2 years, the state approved 739 sites for growing pot, some with 10,000 plants, and the industry leases a total of about 1 million square feet of space in the Denver area. Pot is expected to be an even bigger business in Washington, however. Roughly 1,000 grow sites will be needed to meet demand, with 363,000 consumers in the state anticipated to be somehow ingesting in the neighborhood of 187,000 pounds of dry marijuana annually. The assumption is that the marijuana industry in Washington will be regulated as strictly as it is in Colorado. More teens getting marijuana from medical cardholders from KVOA.com, Tucson, Arizona. More than 33,000 people in the state now have a medical marijuana card, and a recent study done by a state commission shows that some of those patients are passing a joint that should be kept to themselves. The study done by the Arizona Criminal Justice Commission reveals 29% of students, grades 10 to 12, admit to smoking weed. An overwhelming majority say they got it from a friend or family. More than 11% report that they got their marijuana from someone with a medical card. But medical marijuana distributors like Ken Sobel say a slight reduction of overall teenage marijuana use proves the legal market changes the accessibility. State Representative John Kavanaugh filed a bill recently that would put the Medical Marijuana Act back on the ballot in 2014 in an attempt to repeal it. We have other stories to report on the Agriculture Commissioner in Kentucky and the Blaine County GOP in Idaho. We'll bring those to you in Hour 2 in our Toker Talk Radio. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, January 9th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we're going to go behind the headlines and take a look at the White House's response to three different petitions calling on federal leniency for the states that have legalized marijuana. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Well, Ganja John's in the chat room, so I guess there are pirates here. Welcome back. It's not Toker Talk Radio yet. It's still the Russ Belville Show. Man, I'm jumping ahead of myself, having some temporal distortion or something. But welcome back. Glad to have you here. It's 13 after the hour. And we're going to go behind the headlines because the White House has finally responded to the We the People marijuana petitions. And these petitions, if you don't know, there were 46,000 Americans who petitioned the Obama administration to, quote, support a law protecting states' rights to legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana like alcohol. There were another 83,000 Americans that petitioned the Obama administration to, quote, remove marijuana from the Federal Controlled Substances Act and allow the states to decide how they want to regulate it. And there were 44,000 Americans that simply asked the Obama administration to, quote, federally legalize marijuana. In response, the drug czar, Gil Kerlikowske, whom we can't remind you enough, is bound by law to oppose the legalization of marijuana for any purpose at any level, has issued the following statement on behalf of the Obama administration. This is Gil Kerlikowske writing, "Thank you for participating in We the People and speaking out on the legalization of marijuana. Coming out of the recent election, it is clear that we're in the midst of a serious national conversation about marijuana." Yeah. Yeah, Gil, when your boss gets 50,000 fewer votes than marijuana did in a swing state, that's bound to get your attention. When almost 12 million Americans now live where marijuana possession is legal, Yeah, that could be a moment of clarity, I suppose. But the thing is, we've been having a serious national discussion about marijuana since 1970. God, it's just disappointing that it takes two states' worth of voters openly flouting federal law to finally bring you to the table. God, it was almost, what, 4 years ago when you were openly laughing off our serious discussion. And how many of these White House, We the People, Open for Questions, Change.gov things have we filled in? 9, 10 of them now, where legalizing marijuana has always popped to the top of the charts. And we got laughed at and dismissed. Yeah, so it's nice that you finally came around. We brought you to the table on this one. Now, Gil Kerlikowske continues, at President Obama's request, the Justice Department is reviewing the legalization initiatives passed in Colorado and Washington, given differences between state and federal law. Well, look, 129,000 Americans are simply asking you to support a law that's already been submitted to Congress by Representative DeGette out of Colorado to give states an exemption to that federal law. We're giving you an out. And aside from that, there's nothing to review. What Colorado and Washington have done is clearly against federal law. Do you intend on subverting the will of the voters in those two states by using your prosecutorial discretion to go after them for violating federal pot laws? Or do you not? That's all we need to know. For the rest of the response, Kerlikowske just hands off the remainder of it as a with a transcript from a Barbara Walters interview that she did with President Obama, where Barbara Walters asks, do you think marijuana should be legalized? And rather than just give you the Barbara Walters transcript interview response to, do you think marijuana should be legalized? I thought it'd be interesting to compare and contrast that to President Obama's responses to a reporter from the Medford Mail Tribune in 2008, who asked him about the medical marijuana laws in Oregon. And as president, would he be prosecuting those? Because it's really fascinating. You get the same answer to both questions. Here in 2012, President Obama says, well, I wouldn't go that far, legalization. But what I think is, at this point, Washington and Colorado, you've seen the voters speak on the issue. And as it is, the federal government has a lot to do when it comes to criminal prosecutions. It does not make sense from a prioritization point of view for us to focus on recreational drug users in a state that has already said that under state law, that's legal. Rewind to 2008. Senator Obama on the medical marijuana question in 2008. What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue, simply because I want folks to be investigating violent crimes and potential terrorism. We've got a lot of things for our law enforcement officers to deal with. In 2012, this is a tough problem because Congress has not changed the law. I head up the executive branch. We're supposed to be carrying out the laws. In 2008, I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed in a way that is appropriate. That may require some changes in federal law. In 2012, when you're talking about drug kingpins, folks involved with violence, people who are peddling hard drugs to our kids in our neighborhoods that are devastated, there is no doubt that we need to go after those folks hard. 2008, I think there are legitimate concerns in not wanting to allow people to grow their own or start setting up mom and pop shops, because at that point it becomes fairly difficult to regulate. So excuse me if I hold out little hope for rational change in our marijuana policies under President Obama. Some of those folks that his administration has gone after hard include Dr. Molly Fry, Dale Schaefer, Chris Williams, Richard Floor, and countless others who believed him last time he said that prosecuting people obeying state marijuana laws wasn't a top priority. And we understand that Congress needs to change some federal laws. That's why 129,000 of us gave you two different petitions asking you to support Congress's attempt to change the relevant federal laws. Look, I don't expect the third petition, federally legalized marijuana, to be something that you'd take seriously. But you cannot whine about how you're the executive branch and you have no choice but to just have to enforce what Congress gives you, while not supporting the efforts of Congress to help you make marijuana the low prosecutorial priority you claim that you want it to be. And drug czar Kerlikowske, we know that by law you are mandated to oppose any attempt to legalize any drug that is in Schedule 1 for any purpose at any level, so your response is worth the paper it's written on. Maybe I'm a bit different. Other people are a little more hopeful about this, but me, I just sounds like the same old to me. I hope we get something better, but like I said, I'm not holding out hope from this administration.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
Big Daddy thinks.
Funky Roller Rink, Roller Rink, Roller Rink.
Here at the Funky Roller Rink, it's always cool.
They call me cool. Cause I got more glide, my stride, more dip in my hip.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. Fun, fun.
And I wear a mean dark pair of shades. And you can't see my eyes unless my head is bent. More time, give me five. They call me cool.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, for today's Irie Wednesday, we're going to go back to an album released in March of last year from Junior Toots. Now, his given name is Clayton Hibbert. He was born on December 7th, and he's the son of one of reggae's founding fathers, Toots Hibbert, from Toots and the Maytals, of course. Like so many other great reggae singers, Junior Toots began singing as a youth in his hometown church. As his father toured extensively, young Clayton lived with his grandparents in the mystical mountains of St. Mary's countryside, where he learned the importance of man's relation to the Almighty and nature, and responsibility and love for other living beings. So we're going to give you this Junior Toots song. This is off the latest album, A Little Bit of Love. This is the single from the album, and it's called Physically, Spiritually, right here on your Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes.
Now this is coming from us over air, lubricated to you over there, to let you know that we love you and we care. Skiddly-diddly-diddly-doo-bob-o-day. Physically, spiritually, we are mentally strong. Only the fittest of the fittest shall survive in this urban video. Physically, spiritually, we are mentally strong. Only the fittest of the fittest shall survive in this human Gideon. In a time like this, we have got to be strong like the mountains and low like the breeze. Keep a steadfast meditation and keep your mind at ease. Forget about when they said nothing good would ever happen for me. Cause now you got me out, seated in the blood of my family tree. Physically, spiritually, we are meant to be strong. Only the fittest of the fittest shall survive in this human Gideon. Physically, spiritually, we are mentally strong. Only the fittest of the fittest shall survive. In this urban video, my love, you are the no matter get agitated, no matter get frustrated. Job blessing coming soon, never too early, me say never too late. Good things coming for those who wait. Don't jump the gun and me say don't mind the bait. Only meditation and keep the faith. Hey, physically, spiritually, we are mentally strong. Only the fittest of the fittest shall survive. In the sermon, Gideon. Physically, spiritually, we are meant to be strong. Only the fittest of the fittest shall survive. In the sermon, Gideon.
There off a little bit of Love album, and Brian the Red's got some Irie Wednesday music for you coming up tonight.
Yeah, we get some really nice tracks, old stuff for you. It's going to be a really nice show tonight at 8 p.m. Pacific here on 420radio.org.
All right, and check out Red Eyes Reggae with a Z.com.
I'm just overjoyed. I've been cannabis activist for 40 years.
We're turning the corner on a failed policy that's been disastrous for our communities, and things are going to get better.
80 years ago, we repealed alcohol prohibition in this state. We did it prior to the federal government, and we're doing the same thing when it comes to marijuana. We are a step ahead, and we will continue to lead the way.
It means I'm going to smoke a lot of weed tonight!
Woo! Some call it marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Some of them call it marijuana. Never mind. Legalize it.
It's quite simple. I'm a very nasty drunk. I get mean. I get loud. I'll tell your deepest, darkest secrets to a stranger. And I'll puke on your shoes. So, if that's the kind of behavior that this culture promotes, you know, fuck it.
Your one-room schoolhouse of choice. Your one-stop freedom shop. It's the Libra Lounge.
Sundays at 3, right here on 420radio.org.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Well, it's 2013 and it's our first opportunity to speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Happy New Year, Dr. Mitch.
And a Happy New Year to you.
Well, let's get right to it. You know, we've been away for a little while, and I don't know how much you researchers sleep, eat, and party during the holiday season, but I know somebody's got to have something they've studied recently that we need to talk about. What's new in the science front?
In fact, my student Nicholas Von Dahm and I have a paper coming out on clinically anxious cannabis users, and it's been a little bit misunderstood, but we had some clinically anxious heavy users, meaning daily users, and some folks who use daily but who weren't clinically anxious. And our point was really that the folks who are clinically anxious are the ones who may be running into problems, and not that cannabis is causing anxiety or causing any problems in folks who don't already have problems. But unfortunately, people are misinterpreting it, and I just kind of wanted to clear that up.
All right, all right. And so when we're looking at people with these, what's the misinterpretation that they're making out of this?
Well, generally what we find is anxiety is what's predicting how much marijuana use people have, and then making it look like they have marijuana-related problems when, in fact, what they have are anxiety-related problems. Mm. But unfortunately, people are saying, oh, look, marijuana is making people anxious, which is not at all what this paper is about.
Okay, okay. I wanted to talk about a few subjects, but we already have some questions coming in on our chat line. Also want to remind folks here listening to 420radio.org, you can call in at 971-533-7111. Even if you're not listening live, you can call in and leave a voicemail question, and we'll get to it next week. So let's get right to the first question here from Runaround, who wants to know, how did your TED lecture go, and is it available anywhere?
So the TED lecture was quite a delight. It was on humor and community. They were supposed to have it up on the 7th, but it looks like they hit a snag, and I'll be sure to let everybody know as soon as it is up.
All right, excellent. Looking forward to that. Also, you've got that book out, Humor 101, that people can get. Where can they get a copy of that?
So, in fact, your favorite brick-and-mortar bookstore will be happy to order it for you, or it's on Amazon right now, I believe, for $1 off.
Oh, excellent. Check that out, folks. It's part of the Psych 101 series. Was it called Humor 101? That's the right title?
Indeed, that is.
Okay, thank you, thank you. All right, I wanted to ask you about this new organization. Patrick J. Kennedy, the former Rhode Island representative who's had very public battles with oxycodone addiction, cocaine addiction, alcohol addiction, is now heading up this thing called Project SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And my one non-pop smoking friend, Kevin Sabet's thumbprints are all over this thing. I was just wondering if you'd heard anything about this and what your thoughts were on it.
I wrote a nasty letter to the Washington Post about this morning. I am sorry to say I think this is really some misguided, horrible efforts on the Kennedy's part. Kevin certainly knows better than to try this. And right now, one of the Kennedy cousins, Lawson, has a book out on addiction, and I think really this is kind of a mask to sort of plug his book, which I think was number 18 on Amazon this morning, which, of course, fills me with jealousy and rage. He's essentially suggesting that cannabis is a gateway drug. I mean, that's so laughable, I don't even know where to begin. And that these efforts to legalize cannabis are misguided and they're going to lead to horrible outcomes. I tried to explain that, guess what, no matter how many people we arrest, it doesn't help mental health, and nobody should go to jail for owning a plant. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and he puts a twist on gateway that I think maybe we ought to kind of debunk, tear apart here, because it's kind of subtle, but it might fool some people that are new to the reform movement. You know, the former gateway argument was always, well, you'll smoke pot and you'll get high, but eventually it won't make you high enough. You'll get tolerance, and then you'll want to move on to something else that gets you a better high, and you'll all be craving this high. Kennedy kind of spun it in a way to say that the drug doesn't matter. It's the tripping of the circuit, so to speak, that, you know, once you've taken one drug, it makes you a person who likes to get high. And I'm wondering how we can, you know, what's an effective way to rebut that?
I mean, in his words, addiction is addiction is addiction,
yeah,
which is absolutely laughably retarded. All right? Where I literally think, like he's saying, you know, caffeine in the morning is like heroin at night. I mean, it's just, it's so misguided. I can't know where to begin. The point is not that cannabis makes you suddenly crave hard drugs the way salt makes you thirsty. There is not a sort of person who likes to get high on weird drugs. There is a subset of folks who tend to be disinhibited. They're sensation seekers. They don't wear their seatbelts. They don't like to wear condoms. And they do a whole lot of different drugs. These folks create this illusion that cannabis is some kind of gateway, but that's really not the case at all. When you look at the majority, I mean, the vast majority of people who've tried cannabis, they've never even seen hard drugs. And the number of people who are on hard drugs, who are in treatment for hard drugs, huge percentages have actually started on crack or meth before they used cannabis. My favorite example is always Allen Ginsberg, who shot heroin first and then smoked marijuana and said, yeah, gee, heroin's a gateway.
Yeah, exactly. The website for this, Sam, now they're launching tomorrow in Denver, apparently. And the website, I think it's titled learnaboutsam.com. So if people want to, yeah, learnaboutsam.com, if you want to find out more about Patrick Kennedy, this former congressman who's The main quote right here on the website says, "We cannot promote a comprehensive system of mental health treatment and marijuana legalization, which increases permissiveness and which increases permissiveness for a drug that directly contributes to mental illness." So he is, you know, calling out marijuana as directly contributing to mental illness here.
It's just so inconsistent with any data. If he really wants to attack a drug that is used more commonly among the mentally ill, tobacco and alcohol would be by far the first choices.
Yeah, when we look at the website as well, they seem to be focusing on. It seems to me, and I think Ethan Nadelman referred to this in one piece that I was reading, as a strategic retreat. Policy-wise, they're finding out here's a few battles we can't possibly win. And so we'll give on these. Sabet is giving on, like, let's get rid of mandatory minimum sentences. Let's be able to expunge people's records. But throughout all of this, of course, it maintains the illegality of marijuana and the idea that all use is abuse. So this is that Project Sam, and I think everybody needs to be very, very aware about this. And, you know, don't let this fool people. Don't let this fool anyone, because I think this has the possibility of peeling off some people that don't know a whole lot about the drug reform movement here. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We'll take your calls here at 971-533-7111. We've also got room in the chat room here for your questions, if you have any for Dr. Mitch. And another piece of this, Dr. Mitch, that I wanted to ask you about was their point on preventing another big tobacco. And they point out how big tobacco lied about the addictiveness and harm of cigarettes and actively marketed to kids. And if we legalize marijuana, we'll get the same scenario. We'll have big business lying about marijuana, trying to addict our kids. What policy guidelines would you recommend to prevent something like that from happening?
I mean, we've talked with Mason Tavera. We've talked with other folks about regulating cannabis the way we regulate alcohol. I think that that's a fine model. If people want something a little more restrictive, that's certainly worth considering as well. We're, you know, never going to have the Joe Camel days when it comes to marijuana. That was an egregious error on the tobacco industry's part. It really was a case where people could, literally, little kids were recognizing Joe Camel at the same rate they were recognizing Mickey Mouse. Mm-hmm. That was a mistake, and we learned from that. But cannabis is not marketed that way, even at the most insane, crazy, wildest festivals you've ever attended. Nobody is saying cannabis for kids, you know, we're not going to have little Melvin the Pothead as some kind of advertisement for some kind of cannabis products. It's just not how things are going. I feel like the regulations that we have for alcohol are certainly a good model and one that we could certainly go with. When was the last time you saw a beer commercial on television or a cigarette commercial on television? That seems like a completely reasonable way to go. As long as we're pitching towards adults, emphasizing the product and not a younger audience for it, we're going to be in fine shape.
Another story that we covered on today's news was the White House and the Drug Czar finally coming out in response to various petitions calling on at least the federal government to back off and let the states regulate, and at most to just federally legalize marijuana. The response from Gil Kerlikowske is getting some positive from the drug reform community, in that he says, we're in the midst of a national conversation, that we're finally in the midst of this conversation. If you were able to have this conversation with the drug czar, how would we get them? I mean, by law, he's required to oppose this. So it seems to me we're stuck on the federal level, don't you think?
In fact, I mean, there was a time when Gil was, you know, working in Washington State and would have said, oh, yeah, this is ridiculous. Nobody should be arrested for owning a plant. Now he's in a different setting, and I feel like federally folks are so concerned about re-elections or staying appointed or things like that that they're worried. What I would like to do is point out to him how at least medical cannabis is polling, how ideas about decriminalization are polling, and that you can actually not think of this as a third rail issue. Lots and lots of politicians are pro-decrim and still getting reelected. Plenty of folks in the right locales are supporting legalization and still getting reelected. This is the wave of the future. It's safe. Be brave. Go for it.
We have a question from our chat room. Lively Libra is asking, you know, she's pointing out that teens in Iowa are turning to pills when they can't use weed. Is there any data on this phenomenon? Is this common?
Well, what we have seen is national trends where cannabis use has dropped, but prescription Adderall and prescription opiates are up. That frightens me to no end. The idea that Big Pharma is essentially going to make money off the teens while we badmouth cannabis, which has markedly fewer negative consequences, just fills me with dread. I really feel like that's particularly terrible. I had mentioned that at the Normal Conference years ago. I think it's easy to underestimate how these prescription stimulants can really grab onto you and create a weird dependent syndrome that is unparalleled to cannabis. And it's just kind of sad that prohibition has kind of led to this. Unfortunately, I feel like we've undermined our own efforts by saying ridiculous things about marijuana in some of these prevention programs. And so then I get these students who say, oh, we heard marijuana leads to heroin, so we huffed gas, which just, wow, you know, is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. Now, is there any, you know, my theory or my hypothesis on this would be that some of the increase in student drug testing might lead kids who know that pot stays in your system a lot longer than a pill will to make that switch. Is there anything to back that hypothesis up?
Only some anecdotal stuff, but also these synthetic THCs, these weird cannabinoid agonists that were available for a while, that K2 and Spice and things like that, that we just don't know anything about, where people are saying, look, I don't think I'm going to test positive if I use these, so I'll use these instead of cannabis. And, you know, you've got a plant with a 5,000-year history of safety and then some weird substance made in a lab that we have no idea about, and that's, you know, certainly a step in the wrong direction.
We're going to take a question here from the chat room that's outside of cannabis, but kind of along the lines of regulating drugs, and that has to do with tobacco. I mean, we were just talking about big tobacco, and he wants to know, you know, we know that big tobacco, we know that tobacco companies add chemicals to their cigarettes to make them more addictive, and now the government knows that. Are they still allowing them to do that? Is there a law that lets them just make their products more addictive?
So there were certain ammonia salts that were once permitted, and basically it's spooky when you think about those and some of the silica-based materials that showed up that would essentially create little tears in your lungs so the nicotine could get into the bloodstream faster and essentially create more dramatic subjective change in stimulation, even though the amount of nicotine was comparable. I think this worshiping of the exact number, or the exact amount of nicotine per cigarette, and somehow equating that with dangerousness is where we went awry on this. If we let cigarette companies just grow good tobacco and say, look, here's what the nicotine is in that, by all means, we know this is risky, but that's your personal decision, that's one thing. It's when we try to force them to mask the amount of nicotine that's actually administered by creating these weird chemical hijackings that we run into trouble.
So are we saying that a cigarette or tobacco products made from natural organic tobacco without all these extra processing would be a measure of harm reduction?
It'd certainly be a step in the right direction. I know that I'm going to get nailed to the cross on front of a magazine for saying so, but chewed tobacco, of course, has fewer negative consequences than smoked tobacco. Hmm. Again, it's not the same as quitting tobacco completely, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Oh, sorry, that just brings back the visions of the jocks in high school with the cup of spit that they'd bring around with them.
Ew. Big lip and slopping all over.
So maybe they live longer, but they annoy me more. I don't know what it is. Hey, before we go, I want to remind folks on the air here that if you didn't get a chance to get your question in, you couldn't think of a question, or after the segment you go, oh, I should have asked this, you can send it in by email. Just get to 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. And Dr. Mitch joins us every Wednesday, so you can come back next Wednesday if you'd like to listen in on the latest topics, get educated on cannabis science, history, culture, and health. And Dr. Mitch, are there any events or public engagements you'll be involved in here in the springtime that we should know about?
It looks like I'm going to be down at University of Central Florida, that wonderful Normal chapter down there, February 27th, and I'll give more details as that date comes closer.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on our Cannabis Science segment. We'll talk to you next week.
looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And when we come back, we'll have a little bit of time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at a New York Times piece that recently talked about how marijuana is might as well just be legal in California. There's some data they missed in that story, and I thought maybe we ought to fill in the blanks. Stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show right here on 420radio.org.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
My name is Richard Van Wickler. I'm the superintendent of the Cheshire County Department of Corrections in Keene, New Hampshire. I've become a reformer with respect to drug laws as the result of an awakening. I'm 20 years in the business trying to do what I think is the right thing. The war on drugs is a significantly failed policy. I grew up in the military. My father was a career Air Force person. Went into the military myself, went into active duty Army for 3 years. I came into corrections in 1987 because I was a young man, I had a family, and I needed a job. There were a lot of things that I would see that I didn't think were right and things that didn't feel right. When I was a brand new correctional officer, I'm a brand new kid on the job, and they brought in a construction worker who had never been in trouble in his entire life. And he was arrested for having marijuana, and it was like an ounce or so. And he was frightened to death in jail. And there was clearly a different demeanor about this man who was a construction worker, a family man, husband, father. And it didn't make sense to me on how this person who was just scared to death would have to come here for the possession of marijuana. The thought of seeing that man and how frightened he was, it will never leave me. There are people who are in this institution to the tune of $115 a day. That's what it costs the taxpayer for somebody to be here. That is not a risk of flight, and they're not a risk to public safety. What we can do with people who are nonviolent is either have them do day reporting, put them on electronic monitoring, where they can still go to work, where they can still function as a family member, where they can still pay taxes, versus taking everybody off the street and putting them in here. We woke up to a correctional system that we can no longer afford. And we need to do something about it very quickly.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Earlier in the week, or maybe it was last week, I read you parts of this story that was in the New York Times. I think I did this in the news segment. It was called Marijuana, Not Yet Legal for Californians, Might As Well Be. And I'll give you just a couple of lines from this. They say marijuana, as a practical matter, is already legal in much of California. No matter that its recreational use remains technically against the law, marijuana has, in many parts of the state, become the equivalent of a beer in a paper bag on the streets of Greenwich Village. It's losing whatever stigma it ever had and is still has in many parts of the country. It's shocking, says the lieutenant governor. Marijuana can be smelled in suburban backyards from Hollywood to Pinga Canyon, from Beverly Hills to San Francisco. It's part of a dinner party with the customary ease of a host offering a chilled Bombay Sapphire martini. Bill Maher was also interviewed saying, he used to bring pot to all these different Hollywood gatherings and dinner parties. And when a reporter sought to ascertain whether this was an on-the-record conversation, Mr. Maher responded tartly, "Where do you think you are? This is California in the year 2011. And this is an interesting piece to read, but there's a writer in the Huffington Post, and his name is Nathan Robinson. He's at Yale Law School. Wrote a very cogent blog post on this that I wanted to follow up on a little bit. And it's entitled "Marijuana Legal for Beverly Hills and Berkeley Californians. For everyone else, who knows?" And that's the part that was left out of this, is any consideration of the racial or the class angle in marijuana prohibition in California. And for the New York Times to so cavalierly paint California as being, well, it's already legal, it's like brown paper bag, does a disservice to the people who aren't in Beverly Hills or Holmby Hills or, you know, any of these Tony neighborhoods, San Francisco or Berkeley. You know, we're talking about the people in Watts, in Compton, in Oakland, in Alameda, Fresno, Bakersfield, all over the state that are busted for marijuana. I mean, when you've got a piece that is quoting Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bill Maher, and two Democratic Party operatives, it's not exactly a good cross-section of the people in California that are using marijuana. I mean, the sites, the places that you were talking about, suburban backyards in the neighborhoods from Hollywood to Topanga Canyon, some homes in Beverly Hills and San Francisco, the Hollywood Bowl in September, the Troubadour in West Hollywood, places like Venice and Berkeley. Doesn't tell us anything about what the average pot smoker is going through in the state of California. Now, I know there's medical marijuana in the state of California, and pretty much if you want to spend anywhere from $30 to $150 to go see a doc in the box, you can get your recommendation. And yes, I know. Schwarzenegger signed the decriminalization law so that it's just a ticket if you're caught with less than an ounce. But this piece by the New York Times completely ignores the racial element to what's going on here and how this is being used by police to keep certain segments of the population down, to be able to use marijuana as an extra constitutional excuse to rough up a certain class of people. Sure, you're a middle-aged white guy like me in San Francisco, probably never going to have to deal with the law. But there's a whole lot of people that do. And I want to show you some of this. Got some statistics here from the Drug Policy Alliance that do a really good job of showing what I'm talking about. Let me get the graphics out of the way so you can see what we're talking about. This is a graph of the use of marijuana by whites and Latinos aged 18 to 25 for the years 2002 through 2007. And the different bars here in the graph you can see are white, black, and gray. And the gray are for Latinos, right? So when you look at every stat as to whether or not they'd ever used marijuana in their life, whether they've ever used marijuana in the past year, or if they've ever used marijuana in the past month, white folks in California are using at much greater rates than blacks or Latinos. This has proven true from 2002 up through 2007, the most recent data we have there at Drug Policy Alliance. And I'll bet you dollars to voodoo donuts that it'll be the same in 2008, 2009, and so on. When we look at the stats of marijuana use by whites, blacks, and Latinos ages 12 to 17, the youth, right? We got to worry about the youth. Whites, once again, more than every demographic in every case here. So these are white kids, white young adults that are using marijuana. But when you get down to the arrests for marijuana, you see a completely different picture. These are the white and black rates of marijuana possession arrests in 25 major California cities for 2006 to 2008. Now, this is, of course, adjusted by rate. This isn't overall numbers. This is per 100,000 people of that demographic. The white people are in this kind of pink shade, and the black people are in this darker gray shade. Torrance, California, Burbank, Glendale, Pasadena, Long Beach, Merced, El Cajon, San Diego County, Fairfield, Gardena, San Diego, Oceanside, Sacramento, San Jose, San Bernardino, Los Angeles, Bakersfield, Fresno, Vallejo, Inglewood, Palmdale, Riverside, Lancaster, Hawthorne, Moreno Valley, and Compton. And in all of those cases, you can see the black bar anywhere from 2 times to 5, 6, 7 times greater than the bar for the white folks. The black folks are the ones that are getting arrested. Yeah, it might be legal for Bill Maher. It might be legal for Gavin Newsom. Might be legal for the suburbanites out there in Holmby Hills or Topanga Canyon. But everywhere we look, every statistic that we want to look, when we look at the rate of the people in a particular city versus how much they make up of marijuana arrests in that city, the blue bar will show you how many black people are in that city. The black bar will show you what percentage of marijuana arrests black people make up in that city. And again, through the top 25 metropolitan locations, Burbank, San Diego, LA, looking through all of them, the percentage of black folks that get arrested for marijuana is vastly disproportionate to their percentage in the city. In Compton, California, black people make up 32% of the population. They make up 68% of all the marijuana arrests. In Sacramento, black people make up 14% of all the people, but they make up 52% of all the arrests. This is a statistic that holds true in all of California. So don't tell me that it's just about legal. These are the marijuana possession arrest rates in 25 major cities. And once again, you can see those numbers. The last column there, the number of times the black percentage of marijuana arrests is higher than the black percentage of population. The third column, the number of times the black rate is higher than the white rate of arrests. 6 times greater in Bakersfield. You're 6 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana if you're black. You're 7.1 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana in Los Angeles if you're black. You're 12 and a half times more likely to be arrested for marijuana in Pasadena if you're black. You're 13.8 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana if you're in Torrance. These statistics hold true. And this isn't just California. This happens all over the country, but I'm focusing on California thanks to that special little story in the New York Times. And not just looking at cities, looking at counties so that you can get people in unincorporated areas, maybe people that aren't in the major metros. You still get the same results. The top 25 largest counties in California, San Luis Obispo, Orange County, San Mateo, Kern County, San Diego County, Los Angeles County, in Solano County, over 35% blacks make up the marijuana possession arrests, but only make up 16% of the population. This is the result of the war on drugs. White arrests in those counties versus black arrests in those counties. Some of the bars go off the scale. So New York Times did us all a disservice with this marijuana may as well be legal in California. And this is one of the problems. This is a microcosm of the bigger problem with marijuana legalization. And that is, if you play your cards right as a pot smoker, you probably won't get busted. If, you know, even if you're black, even if you're Latino, even if you're young, if you're smart about it, if you follow certain protocols and you have a certain amount of luck, you can go all your life without ever having an encounter with law enforcement. Sure, you live in fear, you live in paranoia, but you can get away with it. And for too many people, especially too many white people, especially too many white middle-aged people like me, who get some from their old college friend or smoke some in the garage, they don't see it as being a big enough deal to risk their reputations and their livelihoods to speak out for it. That's part of the reason we're here at 420radio.org, so you have a place to speak out about it. But we got to get more people speaking out in public and recognizing that there but for the grace of God go I. But for another circumstance, Barack Obama would be Barry the drug criminal. and it could happen to any of us. Let's end it. It is racist, it is wrong, and it's time to end.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
All the time we've got for today. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers. You're growing, you're trying to roll it, you're smoking, and it goes down super.